The Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast is brought to you by Triple Threat Sports. For all your team outfitting needs, call Chris at 708-478-6090. Mariska's in Crest Hill, family-owned and operated since 1933. Chuck's Southern Covers Cafe with locations in Burbank and Darien. And SeatGiant.com. Use promo code MADHOUSE at checkout to save.
Welcome to the Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast with NBCChicago.com's James Naveau and 670 The Score's hockey guy, Jay Zawoski.
Here I am, Chicago!
Welcome into the Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast reunion special. My name is James Naveau from NBC5 Chicago, and with me, as usual, not as always, I can't say that after not being on last week's show, is the one, the only, Jay Zawoski. Jay, I know you probably really enjoyed kind of hosting the show by yourself. Are you happy to have me back?
Of course. I feel like I'm talking into the void when I host by myself. It's weird. I have no one to bounce thoughts off of. I have no one to challenge me if I say something stupid. It's just kind of, it was weird. I didn't hate it, but it was kind of, it just felt weird.
I had thought about doing it by myself when you were in Washington for the baseball playoffs, and I kind of had the same vibe that it would have been like talking to a wall that won't like tell me whether or not I'm being stupid, which, as we all know, is a fairly frequent occurrence. So I kind of need the be reined in a little bit. So
that's true.
It's good to be back. It's good to have my precious laptop here in front of me. I've just been kind of looking at it very happily that it's all working and everything's good again. And I'm stoked to get talking about the Blackhawks. How about you?
Let's do it.
All right, man. We will start with Saturday's game, a victory over the lowly Arizona Coyotes. So sad to see Nicholas Hjalmarsson kind of, you know, wallowing in the misery of the desert, the only winless team in the NHL. And the Blackhawks got off to a real slow start in the game, but they ultimately were able to prevail, largely because of one of their most underrated players so far this season. Mr. Tommy Wingles has had a big impact on this team, and you saw it again on Saturday. He drew a penalty shot, got an assist, got the last goal of the game. Tommy Wingles, I have to kind of eat some crow here. I was like, it's just, you know, overkill getting guys like Wingles and Boma, and they're basically Brandon Machinter light. And it's turned out that he's actually been a really solid fourth liner and a pretty good penalty killer. And he's been keeping Tanner Caro out of the lineup, so clearly he's been doing something right. And I was extremely impressed with the way he played on Saturday, and I've really been impressed overall with the quality of his play since the regular season started. I mean, because he wasn't like the biggest preseason performer, and regular season came in and he just kind of flipped a switch, and he's been pretty solid. I've been impressed with him so far.
Well, I think there's value to having veteran players that have played hockey games before. I know that sounds ridiculous, but, and you said him and Boma were overkill. They were. You don't need both. But if you go get Tommy Wingles, that's good. That's a guy who's, like I said, a veteran player who's been on good teams, who knows what it's like to play in the playoffs. I love the fact that they're letting young guys play this year. Forsling and Ruda and all these guys are in the lineup every night. DeBrincat, obviously. But now and again, you have to have a veteran here or there if you want to compete, if you want to be a good team, if you want to be a playoff team. And Tanner Caro, yes, he qualifies as a kid, but I think we're all sort of kidding ourselves if we think that he's going to be much more than a Ben Smith, just completely replacement-level quality player. I like Tanner Caro. I like what he brings. I just don't see much more of a ceiling than what we've seen from him already. So if Tommy Wingles makes the team better, which apparently he does, it looks like it. If you're watching the games, it sure looks like it. Then by all means, play him. I don't have a problem with that. I just want to see young guys with upside. That's the key word. Young guys with upside get the playing time they need to develop that upside and be ready for the playoffs. Unlike last year, where the veterans struggled, and when they wanted to go to the kids, they knew they were too green to play. Now is the time to play kids, get them ready for the playoffs, and there you go. I just don't think that Tanner Caro is going to be a guy who, if he plays 70 games or whatever, is going to be a much different player once the playoffs start.
I would completely agree with that, and I think that especially with the forwards this year, you kind of have that flexibility with having some of the veteran guys around that you're going to be able to kind of force the young guys to earn their playing time. And I think for the most part, we've seen that play out so far. I don't think Joel Quenneville has particularly been his usual stingy self with opportunities. It feels like he's really giving some of these young guys a chance to really make their mark and to play. And I think that a really good example of that so far has been Alex DeBrincat, who has gotten plenty of opportunities in a variety of different situations and roles. And I've kind of liked the way he's been deployed so far. And he hits a significant milestone when the Blackhawks play Vegas tomorrow night, because he hits that threshold where he burns a year of his ELC once he plays that game. And I feel like that's a significant achievement for him to make it to this point, because I think it means that the team is really buying into him. It's really liking what they've seen from him, kind of the same way that I have, where I've been impressed with the way his decision-making has improved, even in only like a 9-game sample size. I mean, I was half expecting the Blackhawks to kind of pull the Teuvo Teravainen thing with him and to ask too much of him and to try to fit him into a mold that he won't fit into. And I think the exact opposite has happened with him. I really feel like they've given him every opportunity to succeed in situations that he'll be able to succeed in. And more importantly, they've allowed him to make some of the mistakes that young players are going to make in terms of decision making and passes and shooting and all that stuff. They've allowed him to make those decisions, and they haven't punished him yet. And I think you already are seeing a development in his game. And I'm really liking what I've seen from him, and I applaud the coaching staff for being patient with him while also having that culture of accountability that's allowed them to continue playing Lance Boma and Tommy Wingles over Tanner Caro. I think that Joel Quenneville has done a tremendous job in balancing those kinds of two philosophies that he has in his head.
I agree with the overall sentiment. I'm just not ready to celebrate Alex DeBrincat hitting that milestone until it's actually hit. Because there's still part of me that thinks that email is coming that Alex DeBrincat's been sent to Rockford, blah, blah, blah.
Well, he'd probably be sent back to juniors, I think, right? Yes, exactly.
Sorry.
Yeah, he'd get sent back to Erie instead. And I don't see it, man. I think he's here for the long term. I think they're saying, look, like, we've liked what we've seen the first 9 games, and we're comfortable burning this ELC. Now, what'll piss me off, sorry to the listeners who are offended by that word, but what will irritate me is if it's 15 games in and they go, no, we don't really like what we're seeing from him, go to Rockford. Then I'm going to be like, why did you burn the ELC, you fools? What's wrong with you? But in the interim, I'm going to applaud the decision because it seems like they've made the right one.
Yeah, I agree with you. So far, so good. And like you said, he's shown a maturity. I mentioned this, and I think it was with you, maybe not. But he's shown a maturity that I didn't expect to see from him on all ends of the ice. And in the preseason, he said that's what he was working on. He was working on that in training camp. The scoring's going to be there. It's going to be there. He's had his chances. He had the other night, his shot hit Ryan Hartman in the arm and went in? That's basically his goal, right? So when you look at these opportunities and you look at the numbers on paper, they may not wow you overwhelmingly, but there's been several times he's hit the post very cleanly, mm-hmm. several goals that have gone off other players. So DeBrincat is performing as expected. I still would like him to play on a different line. I don't love him with Patrick Sharp. I don't know. I know Hartman's doing great on that second line, but I really want to see DeBrincat up there. Yes, it will be a disaster defensively. We've discussed that. I'm not going to get into it again. But if you have the puck, no one can score on you if you have the puck.
Right.
So I just think that he's better suited there. But as long as he's in the lineup, I'm happy. I'm not going to nitpick too much. But if, the season goes on and the numbers are sort of dwindling there, I wouldn't mind seeing him get a shot on that second line.
I would definitely agree with that. I still think that having him on the third line affords you a degree of balance, I think, that you've had to start this season. And I made the comment, I was on a radio show the other day. I was on Hockey Primetime with Connor McKenna, and we brought up the fact that the Blackhawks seem to be a more balanced attacking team this year. And I think part of it has to do with the fact that Alex DeBrincat is still on that third line. And part of it has to do with the fact that Ryan Hartman has seemingly left that Andrew Shaw boneheaded nonsense behind him. And that's something we're going to talk about later, by the way, is one Andrew Shaw when we get into a little bit more general NHL talk. But it seems like Hartman has he's recaptured the spirit of what he had the first 60 or so games of last season, right?
For sure.
Where
he
was a little bit of an instigator, had a little bit of edge to his game, but his primary focus was on having the puck and scoring the puck, and that's what he needs to do. And he figured it out, and I think part of it is the fact that he's playing with Nick Schmaltz and Patrick Kane, who are giving him the opportunities. But I think there might be a little bit of a, hey, the coaching staff really hammered into me this offseason that I can't be taking dumb penalties and taking myself off the ice, especially with how bad the Blackhawks' penalty kill was last year. They're surprisingly, they're playing a lot better this year on the penalty kill. And I know that part of it is like the competition that you play. They haven't quite gotten their sea legs underneath them. But part of it also is just better execution, I think, on that end of the ice. So it's kind of interesting to see Ryan Hartman kind of pull those lessons in from last year and to kind of mature a little bit. And it's definitely helped the Blackhawks to kind of keep things balanced offensively.
Last year, Hartman was such a mystery to me. You know, in the preseason, the first couple games, he looked horrific. Just terrible that he couldn't play. Then the season begins, and he's much better, very effective. Like you said, filling that Andrew Shaw void of playing physically and scoring, not calling people derogatory names. Again, we'll get to that later. But then all of a sudden, he's almost like the anti-Nick Schmaltz, where the second half of the season comes, and he turns into a dumbass. it was very strange. I don't know what happened there. I don't know why he resorted to that. Maybe he was feeling like, okay, the playoffs are coming, and I need to bring more of a physical element to my game. I don't like that. Do what's working. And what he was doing for the first probably three quarters of the season last year was working. He's brought it back this year. I think plus he's even better now than he was then. I think he looks a little bit faster, a little bit stronger, which is, you know, it's going to happen in the development of a young player. But you're right. I'm very encouraged about Hartman. And when I say that I'd want to see DeBrincat get a look up on that line, it's not a knock on Ryan Hartman at all. I think Hartman's been terrific. I just think that, you know, you're putting him back there on a slowish kind of a line with Anisimov and Sharp. And I just think that he's, I don't know, not putting the brakes on, but he's kind of playing slower than he would like to. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's a good thing for a young player, though. I don't know. Like I said before, Joel Quenneville knows a lot more about hockey than I'll ever know, right? I think the balance is good. You mentioned that, and that is something that they for sure stress. They definitely emphasize that. That's why Quenneville has said for years and years, we don't number our lines. Okay, we do, but it's fine.
Yeah, exactly. You know?
But that balance has always been important to him. And I do think with DeBrincat on that third line, you are getting more offensive balance for sure. So I see the point. I see why they're doing it. I'm not mad about it. I just, before long, would just like to see what that looks like. Maybe it's just like the old-time meatball fan in me.
You've been playing too much NHL 3-on-3 is what's happened.
Probably. Yeah, maybe a little bit. But, I don't know. I'm encouraged. There's really nothing that I'm, you know, through however many, what are we, 9 games in here.
Yep.
I don't have a lot to complain about. Nothing is totally shocking to me. Yes, Brent Seabrook looks old and slow. That's not news. We all knew that was going to be the case.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's a little worse than we thought. But, again, it shouldn't be a surprise to anybody.
I feel like we're at an excellent fork in the road here. Because you brought up two really good points that I feel like we definitely can continue to talk about. One is the balance issue, because that dovetails nicely into a discussion of the top line of Jonathan Toews, Richard Panik, and Brandon Saad. Or do we want to go on the other fork, which is the regression of certain players like a Brent Seabrook, that has me absolutely terrified and questioning whether or not this team is going to be able to sustain the success that they've had so far this season.
Well, let's do both, but first let's take a timeout. It's time for our first timeout. Before we do, I'll tell you about our friends at Triple Threat Sports. You know by now, after what, this is our third season, that Triple Threat Sports is the best place to go in town if you need your NHL jerseys lettered. But did you also know if you've got a team, a softball team, a basketball team, a hockey team of your own, and you want to get jerseys designed for them and equipment designed and off-ice apparel designed for your team, Triple Threat Sports will help you out, and it will look awesome. They will help you customize the logo, the cut, the fit, the design, anything you need. They'll help you. It could be a beer and pizza league team with t-shirts. It could be a traveling hockey team with, you know, an unlimited budget. Whatever you need, Triple Threat Sports will get it to you. So call Chris at 708-478-6090. That's 708-478-6090. Or email him at chris@triplethreatsports.com. Triple Threat Sports, if you can wear it, they can make it. Time for a first time out, but we'll be right back on the Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast.
Welcome back into Make Your Own Adventure. I mean the Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast, where we are currently at a fork in our proverbial road. Do we want to continue to talk about the positive elements of the Blackhawks, the balanced scoring, the young players playing well, or do we want to go in a negative direction and talk about some regression? You know what, Jay? It's a bit gloomy outside today. I think we're going to go in the negative direction for right now. I don't like it, but it needs to be discussed. You know, we can't be all, you know, rainbows and kittens here. We have to occasionally, you know, cast a critical eye upon the Blackhawks. And my eye immediately, these first nine games, has gone to Artem Anisimov. Now, he's gotten a lot of praise the last few years for his ability to play with Patrick Kane and Artemi Panarin.
End your sentence right there.
But,
you can stop your point right there. No.
But,
he's gotten a lot of credit for being able to play with them, as you or I could also do. We could play with them as well.
Yes. However, things yes. have taken a turn for the worse, as he looks a little bit slower and not quite the centerman that he used to be before injuries derailed his 2016-17 season. Jay Zawoski, how worried are you about Artem Anisimov?
I don't know if I'm worried. I think he's a fine third-line center. I'd be a lot more worried if Nick Schmaltz had come out and looked like crap, but he hasn't. And I'm glad that Schmaltz has sort of supplanted him at that number two spot. Look, if he's your number two, it's bad. If he's your number three, I think it's really good. Mm-hmm. Because we do all know, all sarcasm and joking aside, that Anisimov has better hockey in him than what he's shown this season. There's no doubt about it. And like you said, recovering from injuries, it might take him a little bit of time to get back to the form that we're used to seeing him in. Obviously, the production is going to slip being separated from Patrick Kane and Artemi Panarin. Duh. Obvious. And we knew that was going to happen.
Right.
I just think that, yes, he's off to a not great start. I think, you know, playing 2 years in a row with two of the most dynamic players in the game, it's going to change the way you think, change the way you play on the ice. And I think he needs to go back to what he was doing in Columbus and New York and just sort of being that effective two-way center. I think he can get back there. I'm not worried about it long term. I just would like to see it get better, and I expect it will.
There are two reasons why I think concern is valid with Artem Anisimov.
Okay.
Concern number one, his cap hit. $4.5 million he counts against the cap, I believe, for the next four seasons. That's not great for a third line center. That's a little pricey. They need him to produce more. They need him to be a little bit more of an offensive driver of possession than he has been. They need him to be a step quicker than he's been. And I'm willing to give you the benefit here that he's probably still kind of getting back up to NHL speed, but he's going to need to. Sooner or later, he's going to need to get to that speed because the Blackhawks need him to. They need to have a solid third line center that's capable of getting Patrick Sharp and Alex DeBrincat the puck on a more regular basis. And I feel like Anisimov's been a touch off, a step slow, like something's been different about him this season. And he needs to get it together because you can't have a $4.5 million third line center that can't do those things. And the second reason I'm slightly concerned about it is because of the continuous health issues that Nick Schmaltz has been dealing with this season. We've already seen him go down on multiple occasions, and I know they've been fluky things. It's not like it's been like a nagging ankle or whatever, you know what I mean? Like, it's been
right.
kind of fluky stuff. The problem is he goes down, and then Artem Anisimov has to bump up, and he hasn't had the game that's allowed him to do that at all seamlessly. And it really hurts what we've been talking about, the Blackhawks' kind of balance in their scoring and their speed. They have to have that ability to get that from the second line. And that means I need Artem Anisimov to play better than he has. And I still think he can. I'm not writing him off by any stretch. But that's one of the things I've been wanting to keep an eye on, because if Anisimov can't step in and fill that role in a bad situation, that's not a good place for the Blackhawks to be at all.
You're right about that, 100%. And if this team loses Nick Schmaltz for any sort of extended period of time, I'm not totally convinced they're a playoff team. If you're looking at Taves, Schmaltz, Anisimov, Wingles/Caro, that's good. If you're looking at Taves, Anisimov, Carroll, Wingles, that's bad. Their center depth is very fragile, and it all hinges on number 19 and number 8. If either of those guys goes down, they're in deep crap, man.
Yeah.
I mean, I do think Anisimov still has enough in him where if he's moved up with Kane again, you'll see the production rise. It's going to happen to anybody, really. Just sort of by being on, like, through osmosis, you're on the ice with Patrick Kane, your numbers are going to go up. It's just going to happen. But you're right. He needs to be better. I'm a little, it's nine games, right? I'm not going to get overly worked up about the sample size we've seen. I think in his tenure in Chicago, he has been worth what he's paid. Can he, of course, the whole time he's been here, though, he's been with Patrick Kane. So it's hard to really judge. I'm not overly, if I'm listing my concerns, I don't know if he's top five right now. He's one of them, but he's not among my top five. I think there's a lot of other things and a lot of other players to worry about. And that brings us to the other negative thing. And you know me, I got blasted by some dude on Twitter saying that I'm not hard enough on Brent Seabrook. Okay. I don't know what I'm supposed to do or say aside from he's no longer good at hockey, which is the truth. All I've said was I'm not going to be a guy who's screaming and yelling, you know, you suck, Seabrook, because the dude has done so much here. My problem is with Stan Bowman. And that deal, what he was thinking when he signed that deal, I'll never know. And you and I think we did a podcast either the day of or the day after that contract was signed, and neither of us could figure out what the hell they were thinking.
Yeah, we both were thinking that it was way too much term, especially. We thought the money was right if it was shorter term, but we could not, for the life of us, figure out why he was making nearly $7 million a season for 8 years. We were like, no way. Yeah. That's, you cannot pay him that.
It can't be both. You can't give a guy term and money. Pick one. If you want to reward him for his fine work with the Blackhawks and the three Stanley Cups, which he deserves, he probably played for a little cheaper than he could have, too, in all honesty, you say, hey, look, we're going to give you a three-year deal, we're going to pay you $7 million a year, and you could call it a career. Instead, the Hawks give him $6.875 through 2023-24. One, two, three, four, five, 7 years left on that deal if you include this year. What tells you? Look in your crystal hockey balls, James, and tell me what Brent Seabrook's going to look like in 7 years on the ice. I think it's going
to
be a
do
great
I have to?
TV analyst. I mean, they're going to have to invent some sort of skin rash or, you know, something for Brent Seabrook, because there's no way in hell he is finishing off this contract.
I read a really good article in The Athletic today about Brent Seabrook. The title of it is Brent Seabrook's contract could be troubling for the Blackhawks in the future.
You think?
Give me understatement of the year for 600, Alex. In the piece, I thought there was a really good quote, and it says, "The Blackhawks Brain Trust has exhibited a true wizardry over the musical chairs of managing an NHL roster. That spell seems to have been broken, and it starts with Brent Seabrook's 8-year contract extension. He is 32 years old and on the backside of his peak performance." Yeah, pretty much. You nailed it. Like that, you're literally, you're doing the thing that you don't do as a GM, and that is pay for past performance. You don't do it. You pay for what you think you're going to get out of the player, and there's no way in hell that Brent Seabrook, even when he put his name on that dotted line, was a $7 million a year defenseman. He just wasn't. He's really, really good, and it's really hard to replace a top-line defenseman. I know that, you know that, but I also know that you don't sign a 32-year-old to that deal and expect them to continue playing at that level. And from what we've seen the first 9 games of this season, Brent Seabrook not only is not at that level, he's at such a bad level that I am openly calling for him to be a healthy scratch at some point, because he's hurting them right now.
That would shock me.
He is hurt. No, it would shock me too. But the point is, if you're going to pull Michael Kempney from the lineup, or Jordan Esterle, or Cody Franzen, or anybody, if you're going to pull them out of the lineup as healthy scratches, why isn't Brent Seabrook on that list? The game against Arizona the other night, comically horrible team. They are bottom two in every conceivable category, and Brent Seabrook could not defend them to save his life. He even put a puck on Corey Crawford, like a literal like shot. It was supposed to go behind the net. It wasn't even close. It's like, if you can't make that pass under zero duress, what the hell are you doing on the ice, man? With, like, he looks completely lost. He looks like he's lost six steps, and he needs to be benched at some point. It just has to happen.
Well, there's no sign or hope of it getting better either. It's not like you're saying, well, you know, he's coming off an injury or blah, blah, blah.
No.
This is what it's going to be, and it's only going to get worse as his contract goes on. And yeah, I've said it. I love Brent Seabrook. He's one of my favorite Blackhawks of all time. It doesn't change the fact that today, on October 23rd, 2017, Brent Seabrook is a sucky hockey player. It's a fact. I liked what Chris Chelios did, too. I liked what Bobby Hull did for the Blackhawks, too, on the ice. I liked what Sam Ikeda did. It doesn't mean I want them skating for the team right now. You know, it's just, I cannot fathom what Stan Bowman was thinking when he signed him to an 8-year contract extension. Yep. What could the thought process? There's got to be something. He's not just a dumbass. He didn't just forget, right, like how the cap works, or he didn't forget how Brent Seabrook looks on the ice. It's not like when that deal was signed, he was coming off a good season.
No.
He was already, the decline was obvious when he signed that deal.
He was a third pairing defenseman in 2013.
Yeah.
Nobody points this out. That's 4 years ago. He got demoted in 2013, the height of the Blackhawks superpowers. He got demoted. And he signed an 8-year deal 3 years later.
Is there some sort of cap thing we're not aware of? Is there some sort of, I don't know. There's got to be something. And I'm not the biggest cap expert in the world, and I know you aren't. You're better than me, but I know you're not either. I wonder if there's some sort of thing like coming up in the CBA that, I don't know. There's got to be something, because there is no effing reason that deal should ever have been signed.
I'll give you a heads up. I don't think you're getting another compliance buyout in the next CBA. So if Stan Bowman thinks that he's getting one, I think he's sorely mistaken. I don't think there's any chance that happens, because I feel like the NHL isn't going to drastically cut the salary cap again and then allow teams that bailout. I don't see it happening. And if Stan Bowman's banking on that, then he's a dope, because I think that's a really stupid thing to hope for. Like, oh, I hope in 3 years that I get bailed out for this horrendous mistake that I've made. If that's the way you're drawing out your plans as a GM, you should probably be fired.
Well, but there's never been any evidence of him working this way in the past, right? It's not like there's been some deals that, like, okay, maybe that's a million too much. Or maybe it's
Marcus Kruger, for example.
Exactly. Maybe it's a year too long. Fine. But it's not something that's going to cripple you on and off the ice for the next almost decade. There has to be something. And I don't know if, you know, I'm not in the locker room. I'm going to get there soon. But I also don't know if, like, because I'm there so rarely, do I have the authority to be like, Stan, what the hell were you thinking when you signed this deal? I want someone to ask that question. Someone to say, okay, look, we've noticed, however you look at it, on paper, you want to look at it, advanced stats, you want to use the eye test, whatever you want to do, whatever scouting method you want to use, everyone could see that Brent Seabrook was regressing. And then he signs an 8-year deal. Can you tell us the mindset behind that deal?
And not only that, he signed it a year early, too.
And you can't tell me Stan Bowman's going to sit there and tell you with a straight face that we believe Brent Seabrook still has 8 years of quality hockey left. Mm-hmm. No way.
No.
There's no way he would say that with a straight face. He might say it, and people might let him just move on from it, but that can't go without being challenged. It can't. Why? What do you see, or what did you see at the time of the deal that made you think that it was going to get better, or at least, you know, stop the decline at that spot? Because if he wasn't at least as good as he was when he signed that deal, it was not even close to worth it. It still probably wasn't. But if he had been at that point of regression instead of the current point of regression, it makes a little more sense. Brent Seabrook right now is a number 4, number 5.
Yep.
I mean, he can't move, James. Is that a bad thing? Is that something you'd like your defenseman to do, be mobile in some way?
He's, you know what? He's making me long for the days of Michael Roosevelt.
Oh, stop that. Stop.
Hey, at least he was bad and cheap. Not bad and expensive.
It's true. I'll take bad and cheap over bad and expensive any day.
I'm being super hyperbolic, by the way. There's obviously no way in hell I would actually take Brent Seabrook over Michael Roosevelt. Just, there's no way.
I think we know that. I hope we know that. Well, let's use this commercial break to sort it out. But before we break, wanted to tell you about our good friends at Marishka's in Crest Hill, 604 Theodore Street. Awesome. Awesome place. You have to go. I said this last week, James, and I think it was a good way to put it. Everyone that lives within like a 50-mile radius of Marishka's, right? And that's probably a big portion of our listening audience. Mm-hmm. It's a place you need to take the trek to. There's places in Chicago, downtown, where no matter where you live, you want to go see the Sears Tower once, or you want to see Wrigley Field once, or you want to go to Pequod's Pizza or Giordano's or something once, right? Marishka's is the place you should go in the burbs if you have to take that one journey.
Make your trip to Mecca.
Yeah, it's an amazing place with great food and awesome history. A great family running it. They've been running it for three generations. Go check out Marishka's, 604 Theodore Street in Crest Hill, known for their world-famous poor boy sandwiches, but literally everything there is good. Go check them out. Go get yourself the giant twice-baked potatoes. Oh, those were good. Remember those?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I want those again. I want to live in that time. 815-723-9371 is the number for Marishka's, 604 Theodore Street. Check them out, marishkas.com or facebook.com/marishkas. Go there, my friends. All right, when we come back, we'll get to some happier Blackhawks conversation. And that also means we're in one segment closer to our email segment. By the way, want to welcome a new sponsor very quickly, SeatGiant.com. You're looking for Hawks, Bears, Cubs, tickets, whatever, go to SeatGiant.com. At checkout, apply the promo code Madhouse, and you will save on your purchase. We'll be right back on the Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast.
Welcome back into the Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast. We've been breaking down what's good and what's not about the Blackhawks, but if you'll indulge me, that Marishka's read that Jay does always makes me hungry, and it also made me think about a couple of fast food items that I've tried the last few days. Just wanted to give my thumbs up to the crispy chicken quesadilla at Taco Bell. Excellent. And I want to give kind of a side thumb to the ghost pepper cheeseburger at White Castle. It's got a lot of kick to it, and I don't know if that's a good thing or not when it comes to eating sliders. So in my audition tape for the Fat Guy podcast, I say, yay, Taco Bell, and eh, to White Castle. Jay, you got any thoughts, any feedback on that?
I remember food.
Wait, Jay, what do you mean you remember food? Talk to me, man. What's up? Let's get you on the couch and let's have a therapy session here. What's wrong, man?
Well, I've been on a diet for about 18 hours now.
Oh, so that's why you've been so cranky today. It all makes sense.
Well, it's part of it. There's been some other stuff, but see, when you're a fat guy, the world is your oyster. Like, what am I going to have for lunch? Any damn thing I want. Where's that? Anywhere I want to drive. Now I'm on this diet, right? My buddy challenged me on Facebook, and not like, I challenge you. He said, I want to lose weight. You want to do it with me? I said, cool. So me and my buddy Kyle and my brother and my buddy Derek are going to lose weight together. And it started today. And man, because it was raining, I could usually like walk downtown, find something to eat before I get on the train. My train's at 2:30. So of course, it's pouring rain, so I didn't do that. I went to, like, the little cafe they have in my office. Nothing looked good. Then, like, in the Pedway, it's Burger King or Subway or Taco Fresco. It's, like, nothing healthy there. So I'm like, what am I going to do? Then I go home, and I just had soup. And I'm just so hungry right now. All I've had to eat today is yogurt and apple and soup. And I'm proud of myself. For doing as well as I've done through 18 hours of my diet. But, man, it's hard. I know it's going to get easier, but I got to have a plan. Like, see, that was a problem is I just started it kind of willy-nilly. Mm-hmm. I need a plan of, like, bring this to work, snack on this. Like, the apple was great, but I ate it too early, and I didn't have anything with it. Like, I should have brought some peanut butter or some cheese or something to have with it. Tomorrow, I'm going to be more prepared, and I'll be able to go walk and get some lunch. Because if I'm downtown and go to Chipotle, get like a bowl, a healthy bowl, but, you know, no cheese, no rice, just make it healthy. I can do that. I can survive that way. But today, oh, my God, dude. And then I went to Aldi to get chicken for dinner, and I'm like, all I want is a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. And the only thing they had of grape jelly was like a 55-gallon tub. And I don't want all that grape jelly in my fridge and hope like strawberry jelly, and I hate strawberry jelly. So I was pissed off about that. Then I came home and there's some water in my basement. I'm pissed off about that.
You could have drank it. It would have been healthy.
Not this water, my friend. This came like through my walls, and no, you don't want this. So it's just aggravating. I'm just hangry is basically what's happening right now. So I feel like I've turned my mood around since we started, I hope. But if I seem a little down in the dumps, just know it's me wasting away to nothing.
Jay, my friend, you know I'm here for you, right, man? You know that I'm always going to support you no matter what you do, right?
Yes, and here comes some totally dickish and insensitive statement. Go ahead.
A, apple cinnamon jelly is awesome. I had it for the first time yesterday. Mm. Big time game changer for me. You should try that.
Where'd you find that?
I was at a diner having breakfast, and I put it on my toast, and it was life-changing.
Well, can you just, like, buy that in a store?
I wonder. I haven't seen it in a store, but if I do, you know I'm buying it.
Well, buy me one, too.
I will. And B, I have been toying with the idea for several weeks now of giving up soda. Been drinking way too much of it. I've been subsisting a lot on Pepsi, and that's been basically one of the only things I've been drinking at work. In honor of your weight loss challenge and in honor of you trying to better yourself, I am declaring on the podcast that I am giving up soda in, what's the word I'm looking for here?
3 years.
No, shut up. I'm giving that up so that I can support you and, like, you know, help you along this journey and to kind of commiserate with you as we go through this difficult thing together. I'm going to give up soda. It's going to suck. But if you can do it, I can do it, and I'll be with you every step of the way, my friend.
Thanks, buddy. I appreciate that. That'll be helpful. That's one thing I can't give up.
Because I can't give up beer, so I'll give up soda.
No, that's fair. I've been drinking a lot of the LaCroix or the knockoffs thereof, and that's making me happy. It's really, by the way, get yourself a LaCroix and one of those like Yeti or knockoff Yeti tumblers and some Tito's. You're all set.
Oh, woo, yeah.
That's the stuff. You don't even.
All right.
I mean, Tito's is great. And if they'd like to sponsor the podcast, hit us up at madhousepod@gmail.com. But Tito's is great on its own. But when you mix it in with the LaCroix and the ice, it's perfect. And you can barely taste the vodka and you get lit up quickly.
Nice.
Yeah.
Little pro tip. I'll keep that in mind.
Zero calories for that, too, by the way.
Good. Nice. Uh-huh.
Just sparkling water. That's all it is.
Speaking of healthy living, we have Blackhawks stuff to discuss. Enough food.
Yes. Stop talking about this before I cry.
Jonathan Taves. That's a healthy living individual. He's changed up his diet and his exercise and is really his whole approach to hockey this season. And it seems to be paying off for him. I've liked what I've seen from Jonathan Taves. Jay, how about you?
I think we're seeing Jonathan Taves be Jonathan Taves. And as we predicted, you give him a competent line mate. And look, lo and behold, you put your first-line center with first-line talent, and he puts up first-line numbers. What a shock.
Are you insinuating Marian Hossa wasn't competent talent?
He wasn't. He didn't play the whole season with Taves last year.
Fair
enough.
Spent
a lot of time on the third line, and he was 37 years old. And I love Marian Hossa, but his best scoring days were behind him. I think that Brandon Saad, being a scoring power forward in his prime, teamed up with Richard Panik, who is also way on the upswing in his career, entering his prime, that's a legit top line. And you're seeing the payoff. You're seeing the results. I don't think Jonathan Taves looks much different when you watch him shift to shift. Does he look very different to you the way he's playing? Does he look faster? Does he look stronger? Maybe a little bit. But I never had any doubt that Jonathan Taves would return to the level he's playing at now. He's on pace for, what, 80-some points? I think he's doing great. I'm very, very pleased with what Jonathan Taves has done this year. And to me, it's not a surprise. I knew Brandon Saad coming back would be great for him. He had his best years with Saad by his side, and that will continue. So, I mentioned earlier my concerns. Tays was never a big concern of mine. I wanted him to do better, more just to shut people up than to prove me wrong or to convince me he's still good. I knew he's still good. I knew he's still great. So patting myself on the back for being right. Because I deserve it.
I think most of us kind of anticipated that Brandon Saad would give Taves a nice kick in the keister. And I feel like we've all been kind of validated so far this season. He doesn't have, like, the greatest numbers in the history of hockey, but there's a difference that you can tell on the ice with Jonathan Taves. You can tell he's playing with more freedom. He's playing with a new intensity, new speed. I think the Blackhawks getting knocked out early the last 2 years, I think, has really kind of put a burr under Jonathan Taves' proverbial saddle. I really do. I feel like he has gotten a kick in the butt from those defeats. I feel like he's more motivated than he's been in a long time, and there's just a hunger in his game right now, and it's been really remarkable to watch it. And I give Brandon Saad a lot of the credit. I give Richard Panik a lot of the credit, and I give Stan Bowman credit for getting Saad back, because he had that in his mind that he could get Brandon Saad back for the next 4 years and kick Jonathan Taves' butt into gear is he starts to hit that point in his career where the slow decline in production, it's no longer a far-flung thing. It's going to happen at some point in the not-too-distant future, and you want to maximize Jonathan Taves' window right now, and that's exactly what the Blackhawks are doing. And it was a really smart move, I think, to bring Brandon Saad back, and it has already paid dividends for Jonathan Taves, and kudos to Stan for doing that.
Yeah, so far so good. Again, the forwards to me have been not much. I don't have any real complaints about them. Yeah, you want a little more from Anisimov. You want to see DeBrincat score a little more consistently. I think both of those things are coming. Saad has been great. I predict he'd score 35-plus goals. He's got 6 so far. I think up front they're really, really strong. It's just that blue line. You got to find a way. Brent Seabrook's not going to sit. Maybe a game or two, but he's not going to become your number 7 Michael Rosenthal defenseman.
Oh, no,
7 years.
No, and I'd also like to clarify that that's not what I was calling for. I was calling for him to sit as, like, maybe the second half of back-to-backs or something like that. I'm not stupid enough to believe that Seabrook is not one of the top 6 defensemen on this team. I think he still is. I also think he would benefit from occasional rest.
Definitely, yeah. So they're going to have to find a way to exist with him at the level he is. I think the best bit of news for the Hawks has been how excellent Jan Ruda has been.
Yes!
I mean, he's your number 2 defenseman right now, and if he had not, you know, if he was just another Michael Kempney, like how Kempney was last year, hey, there's some flashes of good, some bad here and there, the Hawks would be in big trouble. He has been a revelation. He's been a guy they can depend on every night, every shift he's on the ice, and that has sort of saved them, because Connor Murphy was a guy I think they expected to fill that role, and obviously he's not done that yet with several healthy scratches here through 9 games. Ruda is the key to the D right now, because without him, they would be effed. I mean, you'd be seeing 4 or 5 goals a night. And, of course, you got to give credit to Corey Crawford and Anton Forsberg, who've both been playing out of their minds as well.
I would completely agree with that. Both of those, I think Ruda and Crawford have both been, if I'm picking stars of the first 10 games for the Blackhawks, they're right in that conversation. I've been very impressed with both of them. I don't really think you can say enough about how frequently Corey Crawford just puts up dominant performances and really helps out a team that has a lot of difficulty in suppressing shots. They allow like 35, 36 shots a night, and Corey Crawford makes it look routine. He makes it look easy. And having that kind of backstop on this team has been invaluable, and it's been a blessing for the Blackhawks, and it's really kind of helped minimize the damage done by the fact that their blue line really isn't that much improved from last season. And I think it's giving them an opportunity to, you know, get a little bit further into the season and add another blue liner to try to help out. And I think Corey Crawford and Anton Forsberg being as good as they have are that's you cannot put a value on how important that's been. Do we want to talk about Andrew Shaw now, or do we want to wait until the emails?
Let's do it now.
Yeah. I was kind of thinking ready. We needed to get to a couple of quick hits before we got to that point. So let's go ahead and do that. Instead of starting with Shaw, because I have a feeling I know where that conversation is going to go. Antti Niemi, waived today by the Penguins. Any inkling the Blackhawks could try to make that move?
No, why?
Exactly.
Why do you want a bad goalie?
Yes, thank you. There, I see him going to a team like Arizona who's relying on Louis Domingue to be their backup. That's the situation Niemi is going to find himself in. He's a reclamation project and nothing more at this point. And I would rather have Michael Layton, Jean-Francois Berube, Anton Forsberg, or Marty Turco at this point over him.
He was horrific in that Hawks opening game against the Penguins.
Yes, he was.
Like, are you there? Or are you like a hollow? You remember like Tupac showed up at Coachella? It's like a. I was wondering if Antti Niemi was a Tupac hologram of himself in the net in that game. He was awful.
He was a shell of his former self. It was really sad.
Well, I wonder, was he ever really that good? I wonder, right? And remember, I mean, you want to talk, we've just been tearing Sam Bowman apart for the Brent Seabrook contract. You have to praise him for making the right decision between Niemi and Nicholas Hjalmarsson.
Yeah.
Because that was a choice.
Looking back, it was pretty duh, but at the time, I feel like, yeah, there was definitely some controversy over letting him go. And Stan Bowman absolutely made the right choice, 100%.
By the way, when is the all the Scott Darling lovers, when are they going to start to fall in love with Anton Forsberg?
They haven't already?
I'm just curious, you know,
because... I think it's gonna be a little while because he's not from Chicago.
Oh, and also maybe because the Corey Crawford is still playing insanely awesome hockey.
That has never stopped anybody before. Why would you try to assign logic to this?
Yeah, you're right. My bad.
I did want to... I wanted to bring up one other thing before we get to Andrew Shaw. I wanted to bring up... The Cubs, we've not talked about them yet. You all right with how the season ended? I mean, how are you feeling today, bud?
I mean, no. I cared more than I thought I would. And I will say, like, Major League Baseball playoffs are not fun. It's just constant tension and misery and horror. And every pitch is like, clench your butt cheeks together and pray. It's just... Oh, it was an unpleasant experience. And last year was the same way. I thought this year would be better because they won, and it was sort of like, okay, whatever else happens is gravy. They've won one. Now I just have the greed. And I thought the same thing about the Hawks, too. When they won after 2010, I'm like, I can die now. Great. Well, now I find myself, it's almost like an addiction.
Yep.
Like, I want to, they got to win again. I need them to win again. And I think the Cubs will win another World Series before it's all said and done, but. They've got a lot to do. They've got a lot of things to fix. The good news is they've got a crap load of money.
And they've got no salary cap to constrain them.
And the best front office in baseball. Maybe in baseball history. So I'm not very worried. I just would, you know, I part of me was sort of relieved that it ended in five because I'd never felt they were going to really win that series. But to drag it out to six or seven games would have just been torturous.
Yeah, it would have been cruel. I wasn't as bummed out about it as I thought I would be. I feel like that probably has something to do with last year and just kind of knowing that this team still has bites at the apple left, so to speak. I feel like they definitely still have a shot for many years to come to be competitive. The one thing that I worry about after that is I hope they don't overreact to losing in five games to the Dodgers. I hope that they realize that baseball is a game of limited sample size all day, every day when it comes to the playoffs. And I hope that they draw conclusions, not just on what happened against LA, but on what happened throughout the entire season. And if there's any front office in baseball that I feel confident will do that, it is this one. I think that they're making the right choices with their coaching staff, get a little bit of turnover there. We're going to see some new faces on the team. You're probably going to see somebody like Javier Baez or Kyle Schwarber at least get dangled in trade talks this offseason. But the notion of making massive sweeping changes, as I've seen some fans suggest, is something that I hope it doesn't come to pass. And I hope the organization is more patient than that. And I have a feeling that they will be.
I think people are mad. I had the pleasure of hosting the postgame show after Game 5, after Mark Grody wrapped up his official postgame. I took over for a couple hours after the game ended, and I was actually pleasantly surprised by how calm and level-headed people were. I think there's the initial reaction, the anger and the disappointment of not winning, but then when you really think about it, like, you know, Rizzo and Bryan are going to hit again.
Yep.
You know, Wilson Contreras is going to hit. Kyle Schwarber is going to be better. I can't get overly worked up about it. You think about how much baseball these guys have played, and it's sort of understandable. And they say, you know, the hot team wins the World Series. Well, the Cubs got cold at the wrong time. And frankly, I don't think they deserve to win the NLDS either. They just kind of lucked into it when you think about it with all those passed balls. And, you know, there were a lot of weird occurrences for the Nationals. I don't know. I'm not too worried about it. I think they'll be back. They're great. They've got the best core in baseball. And I think if you said to any, you know, GM in the sport right now, would you trade places with the Cubs? Short of the Dodgers and Astros, I think they would all say yes.
I would completely agree with that. All right, we can't put it off any longer, man. Unfortunately, Jay, it's finally time. It's finally time to talk about you can play Ambassador Andrew Shaw.
I'm just giving you the stroke mechanic, which is the eye roll and the fist clenched and the up and down motion. You know what I'm talking about,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I do. It's the wanking motion.
When you said you can play Ambassador, someone who publicly just shouts the word out in general, the F word for homosexual, no, I don't care. Like, oh, well, here's how I'm going to redeem myself. I'm going to be an ambassador. Sure you are. Sure you are. It's come on. It was so obviously clear when he said that he was that it was just a reclamation project. You don't shout that accidentally.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. Like, here's an example. You listener who may be thinking about teaming up and taking Andrew Shaw's side on this. Would you ever just, like, randomly shout the N-word?
Mm-hmm.
Whoops. Ooh, I was just upset. No, that word is in you. And it comes out when you're mad, and it comes out when your guard is down. The N-word doesn't to me, I don't shout those things when I'm mad. I don't say to my buddy at work if he makes me mad, you F and F? No, I don't. It's not like in my repertoire of names. I might call you a dick.
Douche nozzle is my old standby.
There's so many great names to call people when you're mad. Douche canoe is another one I've heard that I like. I don't know what it means, but I like it. You've got several options. To me, I'm not surprised by this at all, so I can't be mad about Andrew Shaw. He's a homophobe.
Yeah. I'm not even mad at him. Like, it's so easy to anticipate this. I'm mad at organizations like You Can Play that, like, have this, like, notion that they're trying to clean the game up and yada yada. You know what? If you're picking ambassadors like Andrew Shaw, you're doing a really shitty job. Sorry. Like,
well, I think what they're trying, and I see what you're saying. I think that what they're trying to do is to say, look, if you've had these sort of thoughts before, you've said these things before, and you've taken some step back and said, you know what? I wish I hadn't done that. Right? I wish I hadn't done those. We've all made mistakes. Every single one of us has said that word in our life at some point. Right? There's a song. I talk about Jason Isbell all the time. One of my favorite singer-songwriters. One of the most accomplished musicians going today. He's got a song called White Man's World. And it's a lot about, like, the regret of standing by while maybe you weren't doing it directly. Maybe you weren't calling someone the N-word or you're making racist jokes or whatever. But if you're there and you're witness to it, you're just as guilty, right? It's kind of the same idea. And I think that for Andrew Shaw to say what, if he was sincere and said, God, you know, I've used that word the wrong way. I've used that word and I shouldn't use it anymore. And I'd like to change. And I'd like to show other people that they can change too. And then he really became involved and did things to better himself. Fine. I think people can change for sure. And I have no problem with trying to change. But man, he belted that out the first time. And there was no hesitation the second time. And the second time, he never even flinched. Right? Like if it's in your mind that I don't want to say this anymore. And I'm going to try to be better. And I know I've said it out of habit for a long time, you shout it out again, you're like, oh God, ooh, I just said it, right? he had no problem saying it. There was no remorse, no reaction. He just said it like any other word, and there it was again. So, Andrew Shaw, I don't buy your crap anymore. Sorry.
And I, just to kind of put a bow on this, I've seen a lot of really great critiques of You Can Play and about the NHL's efforts at diversity and inclusion. And I would encourage anybody who thinks that the Andrew Shaw incident is kind of like an isolated thing, I would encourage you to seek out those kinds of things. And I'll post a few of them on my Twitter account. There have been some very thought-provoking pieces about what really needs to be done in the NHL and in hockey in general to make it a more inclusive sport. And I feel like this is a great opportunity, if that's an issue that you're interested in. It's a great opportunity to listen to some different voices, listen to more marginalized groups, listen to more women, listen to more members of the LGBT community. It's a great opportunity to learn. Even if you're not the one yelling the word in a penalty box, this is a great time to listen to those different voices and honestly to learn and to apply those things to your everyday life. I think this is a good teaching moment, even if Andrew Shaw is a jackwagon.
There's never a bad time to start listening.
Agreed.
And to start trying to understand where other people come from. And I'm as liberal and left-wing as they come.
Yeah, you snowflake.
And I'm still learning lessons every day. There's still thoughts I have that are like, you know, that was probably not the most progressive thing to think or to say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a constant evolution of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it should be, right? No one's perfect. But if you strive to be better and you strive to learn and you strive to empathize with people, then in the end, you're going to be better off. And everyone's going to be better off for people being around like that. So, I don't know. I don't think we're saying anything controversial. And we're not being, SJWs. I want to get that bad review again. But I was not surprised when Shaw did it. At the time, I appreciated that he at least put forth the, you know, I was just going to give him a chance to redeem himself. But when it happens twice in the same exact situation, then I don't, you know. I can't feel for you anymore. So
empathy goes a hell of a long way. And I feel like the world would be better off if there was more of it.
I agree. All right, you ready to do some emails? Let's get off the serious junk.
Yeah, let's get back to, you know, hockey and stuff.
Yeah. All right, when we come back, we will answer your emails on the Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast.
Email the guys at madhousepod@gmail.com or follow them on Twitter @madhousepod.
Welcome back to the podcast. I don't know why I did Oprah going to break there. We'll answer your emails.
Emails.
Anyway, we are going to do that. And when we do, it's brought to you by Chuck's Southern Comforts Cafe with locations in Burbank and Darien. Go to chuckscafe.com for their menu, for their specials, for everything. Chuck's is amazing. It's great. Everything at Chuck's is wonderful. My favorite is the Cochinita Pibil. That's the Saturday special. Make sure, the first time you go to Chuck's, go on a Saturday, get the Cochinita. It's outstanding. They've got great barbecue, great Cajun, great Mexican food, burgers, fries, mac and cheese, whatever you want, whatever you have a taste for, they've got it for you at Chuck's. So go to chuckscafe.com, check out their menu, check out their locations. They're great. Again, locations in Burbank and Darien. ChucksCafe.com. James, to the emails, my friend. I got one here from Chris. He says, keep up the good work. Kind of wish there were locations for Chuck's and Mariska's out here in Nebraska. Yeah, that sucks for you.
Thanks.
I have a couple of questions. Who is the most irreplaceable player on this year's team? It has to be Keith, right?
Ooh.
It has to be Keith. If he goes down, they are screwed.
Patrick Kane.
I think they've got the scoring to make up for him.
I don't know. I don't know if they do.
It'll drop off for sure. But you've got guys like 14 and some other guys in the system that in Astroza that can come up. They're not going to put up Kane numbers. I know that. But you've got more offensive depth in the system than you have D. If Duncan Keith goes down, what's your pairings?
I still feel like that defense is a tire fire regardless. Yeah,
and then you remove a Norris Trophy candidate.
Well, although I guess you can make the argument that it's more smoldering right now than a raging inferno. So I'll go ahead and concede defeat on this point.
Damn right. Second question. Why doesn't anyone mention Jocelyn Thibault anymore?
What do you mean? No, we mention him all the time. We've never mentioned him, ever.
There's all this love for the Hawks of the 80s and early 90s, but there were some pretty good teams after that. I'd say he's the third best Hawks goalie in the last 30 years.
Whoa! Whoa!
You had me and you lost me.
Oh, man.
What was 30 years ago? 1997?
30 actually, would be 1987.
87. IR math are hard.
So, Eddie Belfour.
Belfour is one.
Dominic Hasek.
He says Hasek doesn't count because he was never a full-time starter here.
What? Okay, fine.
I kind of agree with that, by the
way. Fine, I can go with that.
Okay.
Eddie Belfour.
Yeah.
Corey Crawford.
Yes.
Right,
dude.
Nikolai Haby-Boulin. Haby-Boulin at his peak is better than people give him credit for.
Thibault was an all-star here on horrible teams.
Fine. Let Nikolai Haby-Boulin and Jocelyn Thibault death match. Whoever wins gets to be third.
All right, so here's the question. It's game seven, and you've got Jocelyn Thibault in his Hawks prime or Nikolai Haby-Boulin in his Hawks prime. Who's your goalie?
I just jumped out the window.
I'm going with Thibault.
I'm going with Haby-Boulin.
All right. We'll set it up for our Twitter poll on Madhouse Pod on Twitter. We'll set that poll up after the podcast. See what people.
I'm going to go ahead and say that you're going to win the poll, but it's only because everybody is going to remember Haby-Boulin's second coming when he was crap. And they're not going to remember the first coming where he was actually pretty good.
Well, here's what we'll do. We'll select a year where people can go back and look at that year and look at the actual numbers and decide from there.
All right.
Should also post a link to the roster they played on.
That's
going to make a difference, too.
That's a solid. Yeah, that's solid. All right, I can get behind that.
All right, got an email here from Bryant. Not Chris Bryant.
He says,
I'm a Chicago transplant to California for work. I love your podcast. I have two dogs, and I walk them 60 minutes every day, and you are part of the podcast rotation I listen to.
We apologize for taking too long today.
He said, I just finished today's podcast, and my question is for Jay. After that Chuck's read, can you define the difference between pie and cobbler? Keep up the good work. I can. A cobbler is deeper. Like, it's more of a, it's served in a, not a bowl, but I don't know how you would describe it, like a deeper dish than a pie. A pie is kind of shallow, and you cut a slice of it, and you can serve it. A cobbler is something you have to eat out of the bowl. It's more liquid. So think of I really don't know how better to describe it. It's not something you can cut and serve. You can't cut and serve a cobbler.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's a crust on the bottom. That's probably the answer. I think that's the technical answer.
I'm just laughing because we were literally just talking about diets like 20 minutes ago.
Yeah, I have one foot in the car on my way to Chuck's, just so everybody knows. But yeah, so I think that it would be the technical difference is there's no bottom crust on the cobbler. So you have the pie, like the flaky crust on top, and then underneath it's just the fruit and the syrup and the all that stuff. So Chuck's makes a great cobbler, several, mixed berry, peach, apple, whatever, and it's piping hot, delicious, fresh made, like right there, and they put a big gob of vanilla ice cream on it, and it's fantastic. It's amazing. Mm. There's your difference. I hope I helped. Matthew says, I'm a Hawks fan living in D.C. A lot of out-of-town listeners this week.
Yeah.
With RFK Stadium ending its run, the local news radio station is running a Great Moments in RFK Stadium history. So I'm curious, Stanley Cup and NBA celebrations aside, what do you consider the best moments in both the Chicago Stadium and United Center history?
Mm.
I'm going to go with, for the stadium, the All-Star Game. The 1994 All-Star Game. 91
the
94?
You mean
game.
The 91?
91 All-Star Game, yes, of course. Mm. That was sort of what put the anthem in the stadium on the map. And it was just a great... I was actually there, too. If I'm not mistaken, though, didn't the Bears play a championship game in Chicago Stadium?
They did.
And did they win?
Yes.
Then that has to be it, right?
You would think.
Okay. So how about United
Center?
Well,
okay, wait. You're going to just dismiss the fact that the Bulls won three championships at Chicago Stadium?
Well, if you were listening, he said Stanley Cup and NBA celebrations aside.
Okay. You're using a loophole. I gotcha.
Yeah. So the greatest moments, aside from championships,
yeah.
Well, I guess that would exclude the Bears then, right?
They weren't a Stanley Cup or NBA final.
How about United Center history? Mm. Aside from the championships.
Mm.
I bet there's some like incredible concert that happened there.
Probably.
Or a WrestleMania or something.
Mm.
I don't know. Someone fill us in. What is the greatest moment in United Center history aside from the championships? I'm not a huge U2 fan. I'm not.
Neither am I.
But when they came after 9/11, they had that tour that was like very focused on like the survivors and the victims, and it was very 9/11-y.
Mm-hmm.
At a time when people kind of needed that.
Mm-hmm.
That was quite a thing. That was quite a spectacle.
Mm.
I would assume that's among them.
Yeah, I think for me, like, if we're like casting aside the 2015 Stanley Cup and the Bulls championships for the UC, I'm going to go ahead and say that I still think my favorite Blackhawks moment in that arena was Marian Hossa's goal against the Predators in 2010. Like, that literally, like, camera-shaking insanity.
And that game sucked ass otherwise.
Yes. Oh, my God. It was like a lightning bolt when Patrick Kane scored that goal. Everyone was sure they were going to lose that game. Then Kane scores with 13 seconds left. Then Marian Hossa comes out of the penalty box and immediately scores the game winner. Like, just lightning hit twice that day, and I would say that's probably the most insane atmosphere I've ever seen at the United Center.
I'm with you there. That's a great Hawks. I was trying to avoid like hockey and basketball moments, but that's pretty solid.
I think it's fair though. They're the primary tenants for sure of the building, and we didn't say championship. I didn't say, you know, Keith scoring the goal against Tampa Bay like that. Nope. I went with earlier in the playoffs, and I think I have answered the question accurately.
All right. How about this? The Hossa game against Hossa goal against Nashville, or the Brent Seabrook goal to eliminate the Red Wings?
Oh man, those were both such cool moments.
Especially after having a Hjalmarsson goal disallowed.
Holy crap.
See, that moment to me is the one I will like tell my grandkids about. That's when you knew that the Hawks reign was beginning, right? Mm. Like, not just that they get, like, 2010 was great, but would they ever do it again? After they slayed the dragon of the Red Wings, that was insane.
I still got to go with the first time, man, and it's partly because of, like, the insanity of the Hossa goal and the comeback in that game, and it's also partly how bitter I am that the Blackhawks and Red Wings don't play more than twice a season now.
How about it? I actually kind of like them now. What kind of
right? Like, what's up with all this respect the Red Wings nonsense? I feel like we've gone soft in our old age.
We have. We definitely have. Email here from Carl. Hey.
Carl!
Good to see you. He says, with DeBrincat going from averaging over a point a game to having only 4 points in 9 games, when do you start to think his lack of production could start to affect him mentally? I can't imagine it's easy for a player to have such success at the previous level to not achieve that at the next level without some self-doubt creeping in.
Hmm.
That's probably a little bit valid. But
yeah.
I think when you're playing on a team as good as the Hawks, there's not a ton of pressure on you because they're not they're not really expecting you to carry the load. I think that helps him a little bit. So they're giving him time to develop. They're telling him, look, like, you don't have to go out there and be our savior. We're a really good team. Develop as you can. I think that's taking some of the pressure off of him. I think once we get past this 10-game mark where he could be sent, he can be sent down anytime. But I think tomorrow, once the game is played tomorrow and he's in it, I think that will loosen him up a lot as well.
I would completely agree with that.
Email here from Jason Holter, Salsa Shark, our guy.
Yep.
Bringing up the 10-game thing we discussed earlier. Just wanted to mention because he took the time to email. Email here from Nate. He says, Nate in the Quad Cities, seeing how well Ruda is transitioning to the NHL is a sight for sore eyes, especially when you see some of the lapses from other blue liners. My question is, do you think he will or has played well enough to get a shot next to Duncan Keith as the number two defenseman? That's a good question. However, I think he has, but you kind of have to protect Seabrook with Keith, don't you?
Mm-hmm. I was just about to say that.
Because who else are you going to protect Seabrook with? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of sarcastic answers could emerge for that question.
I think for the time being, I think it's going to look how it looks. And I do think maybe in the playoffs when Q is less loyal and the best players play, theoretically, you will see, you know, Seabrook's time cut a little bit, and you'll see Ruta moved up a lot and playing with Keith. Maybe you see, they'll call it like a double shift for Keith,
yep.
When in reality it's Ruta up there.
A
the
half
pair.
Shift for Brent Seabrook instead.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right, last email of the show comes from Ken. He says, of the teams in unexpected places in the standings, who is most likely to stick there? The Devils, Rangers, Habs, Avs, Vegas, Kings, someone else?
The Kings. I'm going to go ahead and say the Kings are the most likely team to stick where they are. I feel like they've got the goaltending and the experience and all that good stuff. I feel like they've got the pieces in place, even with Jeff Carter out. I feel like they've got pretty good handle on things. I think the regression train is coming for Vegas. I know that they've been like everyone's kind of Cinderella story to start the season, but they've already lost three goaltenders to injury this season. Their luck's going to run out at some point.
Antti Niemi, come on down.
No, don't even say these kinds of things. I think that the regression train is coming for Vegas. I think that LA sticks about where they obviously aren't going to go undefeated or anything, but they're going to be a solid team this year. I think the Devils might have a shot to make some noise, man. That team seems completely different. Watching them play in kind of limited sample size, like last season, I was just like, God, this is just a dumpster fire. They're awful. This season, they've been fun. So I'm saying LA will stick. I'm hoping the Devils will stick. And I think the regression train is coming for Vegas.
You know who I'm fairly certain sucks?
Edmonton?
The Rangers.
Oh, yeah, they're bad.
I kind of enjoy it.
Yeah, you know what? It doesn't bother me that much.
Yeah. I don't really like the Rangers very much. By the way, Rick Nash is a free agent coming up.
Don't.
How much money do you think he's going to make? No. Stop. I'm not suggesting.
I was literally pointing at my microphone like I was pointing at you. I was like, no.
I promise I'm not suggesting such a thing. I'm just saying, what kind of money is he going to get on his next deal?
Too much.
I don't think so. Who's fooled by Rick Nash anymore?
There is always a GM that will be fooled by a player.
Well, let's see. What does he make now? Let's do some real-time radio shit. Let's see. Rick Nash, cap-friendly. Rick Nash. He makes 7.8. That's Brent Seabrook when I was on. Boy. He had 38 points last year.
God.
You talk about bad contracts.
How many points did Brent Seabrook have last year?
That's a good question. Let's check it out. Maybe they can move Seabrook to forward.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Power forward.
Give him that Michael Seabrook. Roosevelt treatment.
Last year, Seabrook had 36 points.
Brent Seabrook hits a friggin' wall. Has two fewer points than Rick Flippin' Nash.
He did it in a lot more games, but still.
He's also under contract for like 5 or 6 more years. So, yeah.
If Rick Nash gets more than $3 million, I'd be surprised.
I hope you're right. I sincerely do.
All right. Anything else to add, my friend, or are we going to wrap this puppy up?
Are we going to pick a winner?
Oh, yeah. I think we know the answer. The United Center history guy.
I was going to go with goaltenders. Huh. I was going to go with our Jocelyn Thibault Nikolai Hobby-Bulin argument.
Tell you what, we're going to give away 2 cards today. How's that?
Done. I like that idea. Those were both excellent questions.
They'll both win a card. They both win Breakfast at Chuck's.
Even though one of them lives in Nebraska.
Oh, yeah. Well, he won't win then. He'll win a card, not a
give him a card. Yeah.
Right, I'm trying to find a good one here. Hang on, I'm gonna dig in. I can see these. I don't want to see them. Oh God. Okay. I've never even heard of this guy. This was the goalie guy. Where is this one? I can't find his name. This is really professional stuff we're doing right now. I'll find it. Hang on. Hang on, everybody. Where is it?
Where's what?
I gotta find the email.
It's from Chris.
Chris wrote the... Oh, yeah, here we go. Chris Staggs. He's a guy in Nebraska. You win a Mark Osborne card. You may remember Mark Osborne's season with the 1991 Maple Leafs, where he had 6 points in 18 games. Congratulations to you. Who had the United Center one?
Crap. I had it written down, and I threw
Matthew.
My notepad. There we go.
Matthew.
Sorry.
Now, I saw this card, and he's going to win it because it makes sense. This is a 1992 Mark Recchi card, and he's wearing the All-Star jersey from the game at the Chicago Stadium, and there's the logo of the 91 All-Star game on the card. So because of his question, he wins that card. How about that?
Very appropriate.
We have Mark Recchi, and we have Mark Osborne.
We really made our mark today.
All right, I'll be back solo again next week on the Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast. Come on. Jeez, with the dad jokes. What are we doing this week schedule-wise, by the way? I want to talk to you about this off the air. Why don't we do a Sunday morning podcast? Does that work for you?
I think that'll work, yeah.
Because they play Friday. They play Saturday.
Yep.
So we'll do a Sunday morning, and then they don't play again until Wednesday.
Sounds good to me.
All right, we'll talk to you guys Sunday afternoon after I edit everything together. Thank you for listening to the Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast. For my partner, James Naveau, I'm Jay Zawoski. Thank you to our sponsors, Triple Threat Sports. For all your team outfitting needs, call Chris at 708-478-6090. Mariska's in Crest Hill, family-owned and operated since 1933. Chuck's Southern Comforts Cafe, with locations in Burbank and Darien. Visit chuckscafe.com. And if you're in the market for tickets, visit seatgiant.com. Apply the coupon code MADHOUSE to checkout, and you will save money, and that's always a good thing. Thanks again for listening to the Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast.